thinking about this city. At the end of a challenging week for millions of Americans, this city and all of the cities in the path of the superstorm this week, it's a reminder of our relationship, our bargain as human beings, as civilization, our bargain with nature. We withstand nature's wrath and tolerate her lack of cooperation, we say. But maybe it's our human lack of cooperation with nature that's more of the problem at times like these. Manhattan is an island, we're reminded of that. New York City is a coastal zone, we've been reminded of that this week. And predictions of this kind of storm, Superstorm Sandy, predictions that something like this would occur have been around for a while. Do we need to rethink our environment here in New York and along the Eastern Seaboard? Pretty much everywhere we've settled in North America, do we need to rethink our environment to make conditions more sustainable in the future? Drop, in a sense, our delusions about nature, her wrath, and cooperation. Joining us now is Alan Wiseman, author of The World Without Us, which envisions a New York with all of the humans and signs of human habitation gone. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So if New York was going to revert to its so-called natural state, I guess it would start with a couple of storms like the one we saw this week, right?
Yeah, that would probably be exactly what would start returning Manhattan to its pre-colonized by humanity state. Though we have to remember that the name Manhattan comes from an Algonquin term that means hilly. It used to be a much hillier island before those hills were flattened down to superimpose a grid of streets on top of it. And all those hills had rivers and streams running around them, which wicked away rainfall. Those all got buried when those hills were flattened, and now the subway tunnels, et cetera, have to deal with a lot of underground rivers that are trying to fill them up all the time.
How do you imagine rethinking on a large enough scale to do something useful, rethinking our relationship with the environment, thinking about a possible redesign? If you could do something tomorrow, what do you think the first thing would be that you would do to rethink, redesign places like New York?
Well, it depends on how much money we have. There are really only two things that come to mind that we might do to deal with a climate regime in which seas are going to be higher, because water is expanding and glaciers are melting, you know all this. One is that we build seawalls, or two is that we all move to higher ground. And given that seawalls are not just going to have to protect cities like New York, but they're going to have to protect entire seaboards, it becomes impractical to think of building a barrier all along the Atlantic coast of the United States. And of course, this is not just the United States. Most of the major cities in the world are coastal, or at least a very significant percentage of them, and they're all going to be facing this. Moving up higher is going to create tremendous, tremendous difficulties. And yet, I remember years ago when I was following initially some of the global warming stories, talking to the head of the biggest coal company in the United States. Actually, he was not the head, he was a vice president. He also had a PhD in physics. And I asked him about his company's policy of continuing to mine 100 tons of coal a day to burn. And he said, well, humanity is pretty adaptable. And if we need to, we'll all just move 3 feet up the beach. That's going to be expensive. But I think that these are things that we're going to have to start thinking about, because more and more of our low-lying territories are going to be more frequently underwater.
Centuries ago in Northern Europe, though, the population, I guess, got fed up with the amount of persistent flooding and created a system of dikes and pumps and windmills and the like on the scale that we're living now, is such an impulse of adaptation impossible to contemplate, or do we have to just do it in a bigger way?
Well, you know, I've been working on another book, and it's one that took me all over the world. I was in 21 different countries, and I remember at one point I'm in the Philippines, and I mean, several of the places that I went to were undergoing floods, either when I was there or on either side of my trip. And the Dutch ambassador warned the Philippines that they had to build dikes around Manila. Otherwise, you know, the city was going to sink. And it's the expense of diking Manhattan Island is so formidable that it's hard for us to think about doing that. Can you imagine these countries that are much poorer and much more populous than we are facing this? These are going to be really enormous issues, and it's going to require a reorienting of a lot of our budgetary priorities in the world. I mean, fortunately, if you think about the budget of the United States, we have been throwing some pretty expensive parties in Iraq and Afghanistan over the past decade. If we took those now trillions of dollars and put them into a different kind of defense of our low-lying territory, then maybe we'd have a chance to do this. But frankly, these are numbers that I haven't crunched. Nobody's crunched them yet. We're going to be forced to start thinking about it, though.
Before we go, I wonder if it's a failure of will, in a sense, that we extol the virtues of rebuilding and toughing it out in the face of storms like this. But, you know, thousands of years from now, they may look at us and go, man, these people couldn't plan for anything.
Well, we're facing something unprecedented in human history. We've never been against rising seas. We've never been against rising average temperatures. Pretty much for the past 10,000 years or so, aside from the little fluctuations, things have been what we consider normal. We have a new normal coming up, and we're going to have to respond accordingly, but it's very hard to psychologically change into something that we've never seen before.
Alan Wiseman, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Alan Wiseman is the author of The World Without Us. He's working on a book that I'm anxious, actually, to read based on that conversation. We're hearing a lot from you about why radio is so vital at times like these. I love this text. Perhaps it's age, but I feel that society as a whole is growing ever more distracted. I like radio for the way it paints with words and invites you to think rather than bury you with images. Ashley Hughes said this: I love being informed of how people, places, and the world are doing. I also get my intellectual conversations from the radio because I work with two-year-olds all day. That's a good one. And we still want to hear your storm stories.
I'm sorry that it takes this wake-up call with a massive loss of life that should never occur in the United States, but this is what the National Hurricane Center has been worrying about, people not heeding their warning and building up too much on the coast that one of these storms comes through and there's a massive loss of life.
We leave you with that voice, as we always do. Your conversation is really important to us. Reach out at 877-8-MY-TAKE. When we get together again, it'll be the day before the election. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.